This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
And later on, British Petroleum may be fined up to $18 billion for Gulf spill.
A snow leopard does not know it's on the endangered species list. Mr. and Mrs. Crab are not into destroying the world. They are going to the mud flats to take in some rotten insects. It's not what's up that's going down. When you smell yourself on the threshold of extinction, it's you and your portable chemical toilet going to hell under friendly fire. It's you and your missile receptor exploding to pieces. It's not what's up that's going down.
Point Lahash is a small fishing village in Plaquemine Parish, Louisiana. It is primarily an African-American community, with seafood being its primary industry. And I employ my brother, my two nephews, and five cousins.
This probably be the best burl crab you ever ate.
We have that advantage here, working with these fresh products. The fishermen, they are most important to us. It's our livelihood. It brings us visitors, and it helps the economy. It's everything to this area.
This oil spill is the worst environmental disaster America has ever faced. We will make BP pay for the damage their company has caused.
Dead. Everything dead.
These communities have nobody to fight for. They have no voice. I chose to do it, and I'm going to do it, and hell and high water won't stop me.
In the news media, oh, we didn't know they had black fishermen. Hello? 90% of the fishermen down here are black.
The thing that struck me about these fishermen was the fact that there was a history that has not been told.
They've been fishing these waters for generations.
Now I'm living off of $200 a month worth of food stamps.
Day in, day out, I hear the same stories, not just from my brother, but from the entire community. People claims being denied or offered pennies for their losses. I've been on these waters since I was a child. Between the state bad policies and BPL spill, they have destroyed us.
This is like we've been poisoned and they left us to die.
And if it wasn't for living here with my dad or my children, I would be homeless.
And now to see him in this situation, it's just hard.
The world must know what they have done to this community. This place could have been a paradise.
Just one of the communities that was sorely affected by the BP oil spill, the devastating black tide that has destroyed the environment, the wildlife, the industry, people's lives, people's livelihoods. And we are now turning our attention to the fact that BP may be fined up to $18 billion for willful misconduct for the spill in the Gulf. But the question is, really, is that enough? And to ferret out what continues to go on in that area. And I'm delighted to be having as our guest Antonia Juaz, who is an oil and energy analyst, an author, a journalist, an activist. She's authored several books, including Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. She's currently writing a feature article for Harper's Magazine on the impacts of the disaster of the deep ocean following her participation in a submarine dive to the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico at the site of the spill. And we should know this is against the backdrop of federal Judge Barbier held that BP routinely put profit over prudence, people, safety, and the environment, and the result was and remains catastrophic in the 4 years since the blowout on the Deepwater Horizon oil rig, which killed 11 workers and sent millions of barrels of oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. Antonia, it's wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me back. A pleasure to be with you, Mimi. And just my last name is pronounced Juhas.
Juhas.
My father would want me to say that. Juhas for the next.
And we will remember that. Thank you.
Excellent.
Antonia, if you could give us somewhat of a forensic analysis of what the federal judge actually did hold in response to BP and those companies that it was contracting with, and we can start from there.
Absolutely. Actually, the first thing that I just want to say is it was really wonderful to hear that introduction from the documentary film Vanishing Pearls, and the person whose voice we heard the most was Byron Encalay, who's the president of the Louisiana Oystermen's Association. He's someone I've been interviewing since 2010, since this disaster began. He and I actually went to London together to speak at BP's annual shareholder meeting, not by invitation of BP, of course, but I've traveled with him. I've interviewed him. I've written about him. He's definitely included in my book, Black Tide, and his is a voice that needs to be heard, and including all the fishermen and fisher folk from Point Alahash. So I really appreciate you opening with their voices. So what just happened in New Orleans, a federal judge, Judge Carl Barbier, after 4 years of legal proceedings, released one of the most important findings thus far in the case against BP. And this is the federal government's case against BP, among other parties. And this finding was that BP and Transocean and Halliburton, the three major companies involved in this disaster, were all found by the judge to be guilty, to have behaved negligently, and to have, through their actions, caused this disaster to happen. That's very important on a basic level. It means that the judge said this wasn't just an, oh my God, this, you know, terrible event happened by accident and there's nothing the companies could have done and this is just the way things go. He said absolutely not. In a very detailed 150-page judgment, he said they caused the accident. Then beyond that, he said that BP acted with gross negligence, which means that in decision after decision after decision after decision, when BP could have chosen another route, the company chose again and again and again, in the words of the judge, to pursue profit over prudence, that it made decisions based on profit, not on averting risk, and that those decisions led to this disaster as well, and that BP's gross negligence and willful misconduct in pursuit of profit, these are the judge's words, make it liable now for the highest possible fines under the Clean Water Act, that a potential of $18 billion going into the next phase of the trial, which is when the judge will determine how much oil was actually released into the Gulf of Mexico and then how much BP ultimately owes for that, for the release of that oil. But under the Clean Water Act, the potential is now that BP faces the highest possible fine, $4,300 per barrel of oil spilled. If BP had only been found negligent, they would have faced only a quarter of that, $1,100 per barrel of oil spilled. So this is a very significant ruling across the board. The judge saying all three of these companies, the largest companies operating in offshore, BP, Halliburton, Transocean,
all of them caused this disaster. That's very significant and opens us up to a much broader conversation on what I would certainly argue is the lack of safety in offshore drilling more broadly, not just this one incident.
Yeah, I want to return later to the question of offshore drilling in general and some of these companies, but what are some of the points that the judge made as to the decisions that were made that influenced his ruling?
This judgment was very carefully just looking at what caused this disaster. So the judgment wasn't looking, just to say as a caveat, more broadly at problems as they exist across the industry and systemic problems. He was really just saying, you know, what are the things that made this incident happen? And he pointed to a number of really important problems. I think he omitted some of the important problems as well, and you'll see some of those articulated in my book, Black Tide. Some of the things that he, I think, sort of brushed over in the ruling, I think are more significant than were given attention. But he did hit definitely the most important points. And these were basically that over a year's worth of warning that this was a very difficult place to drill, as is all of the Gulf of Mexico. So the Gulf of Mexico is one of the most dangerous places to drill in the world. It's very rich in methane, very prone to what are called gas kicks, the gas getting up into the well and kicking. And that's what happened in this case. And that in this case, the companies were not successful in fighting back that gas, and instead Halliburton performed an incredibly poor cement job. Transocean, which is the owner and operator of the Deepwater Horizon rig, did not, its crew did not follow standards that it should have been following in its operations and its upkeep of the rig and its upkeep of key components of the rig. That BP continually made choices when it could have used more expensive techniques, could have conducted more tests, could have used more safety elements, chose the cheaper, faster method. And in each of those decisions led to this disaster. Two of the more critical failures were Halliburton's bad cement job, and then the other was Transocean and BP both allowing the blowout preventer, which is this big piece of equipment that sits on the bottom of the ocean at the site of the well, that if there is likely to be a blowout, the gas and the oil escaping from the well, then the blowout preventer is supposed to lock in the well. Well, one of the things that happened was that the blowout preventer was allowed to have its batteries run out. Basically, the batteries weren't charged, which is just, you know, ridiculous and horrible, but that's one of the things that happened. But beyond that, what's clear is that even if the batteries had been charged, it probably wouldn't have been able to stop this disaster, because the blowout preventer, like probably almost all of the blowout preventers being used right now in offshore drilling, isn't designed properly to actually perform the function it was supposed to perform. So this was a failure of regulators, of the companies, and the decision-making of the companies.
So we have a situation where we have 4.2 million barrels of oil that are released into the Gulf, 5 million barrels of oil spilled from the Macondo well. But I'm interested in the possibility, which as a lawyer I know is very difficult, and that is punitive damages. And punitive damages means that it's a way of disciplining the company and acting as a inhibitor for future bad conduct. And it means that you get three times the amount of the penalty if you can show that it was willful. Has the judge left open the possibility that BP could also be subject to punitive damages in the future?
Yeah, and I'm not a lawyer, so there has been a lot of confusion on how to interpret the judge's ruling on this regard. What seems clear is that, as you said, the judge has left the door open. The ruling said that the judge himself in his court can't apportion punitive damages, that the law restricted his ability to do so. But he left it open for other courts to do so. So I saw, for example, a statement by a representative of the state government of Alabama, and many of the state governments are still putting forward their cases against BP, and the state of Alabama is ready to go after punitive damages. They see that this door is open and that they can now pursue it. So I think we're going to see a lot of debate over the issue of punitive damages, but what seems clear to me is that the judge left that door open for other courts to pursue.
Do the fines, their giant fines and damages on the company, billions of dollars, do you think that will make things safer on these oil rigs, or is something more need to be done?
Yeah, I guess, so the first thing that we should say, that we should discuss, is that this is just one of the many proceedings still ongoing against BP. So this was just to look at who was responsible, so that we can get to these particular fines under the Clean Water Act, which could total $18 billion. There are other cases still being pursued against BP and other places for damages. So, for example, the natural resource damage assessment, which is a very important thing that we now have as a result of the Oil Pollution Act, which was passed by Congress after the Exxon Valdez spill, no similar anything has been passed by Congress to address offshore oil spilling as a result of this disaster. The natural resource damage assessment requires an assessment of all the harm done to the natural environment as a result of this disaster, and requires BP to not only compensate for that harm, but to restore the environment. So when that's done, that's going to be many billions of dollars in fines. The one good thing that Congress has done, and this is very good, is that as a result of incredible organizing from the Gulf Coast, a piece of legislation called the Restore Act was passed, and that says that the majority of this money, all of this money, is going to go directly to the Gulf Coast for restoration, with money geared for restoration. So that's very important. But nothing has been done to address offshore oil drilling. And sorry, I skipped one piece. There's also been several settlements for individuals who are harmed. And right now, BP is fighting, trying to get the Supreme Court to stop the settlement for the individual harms, the individuals and businesses who suffered economic losses as a result of this disaster. So that's another piece of this ongoing economic fight. Nothing has been done to make offshore drilling more safe. And the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, which is, I think, one of the best federal oversight agencies that comes in after an industrial accident and tries to figure out, an independent federal investigatory board that says what happened. They released a series of really important findings on the Deepwater Horizon disaster. And they said it's not a question of if another Deepwater Horizon type disaster will happen, it's when, because there just have not been sufficient regulatory or industry changes to address systemic problems throughout the industry. So it's very clear that there continues to be serious ongoing threats to another incident of this type happening again.
One of the things that you had written about, there is some mention of Dr. James Diaz, who's the director of the Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences Program at Louisiana State University, and he called the BP spill a toxic gumbo of chemicals to which the people, places, and wildlife of the Gulf continue to be exposed. Now, I'm interested in one additional component. There's the spill, and then there's the cleanup, if you will. And the cleanup, the dispersants are toxic as well. I think it's called Corexit.
Corexit.
And I wonder if you can talk about, was that in any way built in, what the legacy of the Corexit is, which has engendered numerous health complaints from people who were involved in the cleanup process and, frankly, throughout the community, the environmental circumstances of that. And I want to make sure you talk about your submarine dive, because there aren't too many journalists that we speak to that do that kind of investigation and have the opportunity to go deep sea and tell it like it is.
Absolutely. So the Corexit was you know, adding insult to injury, you had, just to get the numbers right, so 5 million barrels of oil were released from the well at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. But a tiny portion of that was successfully captured by BP using an array of devices that it finally got into place. So it caught some of it, and it didn't actually go in. It released from the well, but didn't go into the water. That's why the numbers that we're talking about are only 4.2 million barrels of oil for what it's going to be fined for. That's based on what actually went into the Gulf of Mexico. All of this oil is spewing into the Gulf of Mexico. As it was spewing, we discovered a really dirty little secret that the oil industry was keeping from us, which was that none of the companies, Exxon, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Shell, none of them knew what to do in response to a deep offshore blowout, even though every single one of them had guaranteed that they knew what to do when they got their licenses to drill. So for 87 days, they learned on the fly, trying to figure out what to do as the oil was spewing. And they finally came up with a cap that they could put on top of the well. And if you remember, this is when they were throwing, you know, throwing rubber balls at it, throwing tires at it, trying to figure out what to do. Finally, they came up with a cap. While that was happening, they were also burning oil on the top of the ocean, which was incredibly toxic. And they applied 2 million gallons of toxic chemical dispersant, the Corexit. And all that that did was break up the oil. It doesn't make it disappear. It makes it disperse. So it made it separate throughout the Gulf so that you wouldn't see these big globs of oil. And essentially what that was an attempt to, in a certain respect, to sacrifice the ocean for the shore. Keep the oil in the ocean so not as much of it would come ashore. And what that meant was this toxic soup, the combination of the Corexit and the oil, which is itself toxic, combined was even more toxic. And that was allowed to permeate in the ocean and make its way to the shore as well. The impacts of that are being addressed. In the human health component of the settlement that was reached with BP, which BP is now fighting at the Supreme Court, but the settlement was reached where people were getting money who were harmed by the disaster. And in the natural resource damage assessment, it's definitely going to be part of what the harm was that was caused by this disaster is also the ongoing harm being identified as a result of the Corexit. So there's still things that we need to watch. This isn't over. There still is the natural damage resource assessment. There still is the individual component of the settlement that BP has fought to the Supreme Court. And there is the chance that BP, of course, is going to appeal the settlement with the federal government. So no one should think that this is over. It's really important that the public continues to pay attention so that BP and all the companies are truly held to account for what took place.
And quickly, your dive to the bottom of the ocean, what have you discovered? Actually, it's a couple of dives now that you've made in your investigation of the BP oil spill.
Yeah, just one. Wrote a blog in April as I was departing for Harper's Magazine. I had this incredible opportunity to go on a research mission on the Atlantis Research Vessel into the Gulf of Mexico, and I was able to take a submarine dive into Alvin submarine, just an incredible experience. And I got closer than anyone has ever gotten to the site of the Deepwater Horizon in a human-occupied submarine. And as you said, I am currently writing about it, so I can't tell you everything that I saw because I'm still researching it and writing it. But I can say that the impacts on the deep ocean are severe, they're ongoing, and they're likely to be with us literally forever. This oil spill isn't going anywhere at all.
Well, we'll certainly have you back when you can talk further after the article comes out in Harper's about your experience. In the 30 seconds or so that we have left, so when will we ever learn what has been learned?
You know, this is going to be with us forever. The impacts are going to be in people forever. One of the ongoing impacts of oil exposure is developmental disorders, cancers. These are problems that are passed on in pregnant women to their unborn children. And environmentally, you know, we're finding corexit in the eggs of birds in Minnesota who pass through the Gulf. You know, this is an ongoing issue that we need to continue to pay attention to. And we need to learn the lesson, which is, frankly, I think, offshore. Just because oil's out there doesn't mean we should be in offshore drilling, particularly deep water offshore drilling simply isn't worth the risk.
And you'll learn a lot more by reading Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill by Antonia Huhas. Have I got it right? Your father would say that's okay this time. Thank you for all the work you've done these many years on this critical issue. We have been speaking with Antonia Huhas.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.